The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
We have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to our Friday Space Show program. Great to be here. Thank you all for tuning in. A really gorgeous day in the San Francisco Bay Area. I hope wherever you are, it is equally as nice. A couple of quick announcements and then on to a really interesting and informative discussion coming up. You can call us during the program and talk with our guest. The toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. No call screeners. Let it ring. We'll get you up on air as quickly as possible. We'll hold you over a break as well, or we'll answer your incoming calls during a break. And then you can always email us if you don't want to use the toll-free line, drspace@thespaceshow.com. But again, phone calls are much preferable over email, so do keep that in mind. Our website is thespaceshow.com, and on there you will find the comprehensive website newsletter, and that goes up every Sunday evening. It has all of the details of the week's programming, guest bios, and it's the only place where we have a future events section, so you can find out who's on first, so to speak, over the next coming weeks. And then if we have to make announcements, this is where we're going to put those announcements first, if we have to change programming or anything like that. So I urge you to check the website newsletter from time to time to stay current. You can also subscribe to the very short email newsletter. Either send your request to drspace@thespaceshow.com or use the pop-up window on the website newsletter. This goes out early Monday morning, California time, by email. One or two lines about each of the programs during the week. It's very short. So let us know if you'd like to be a subscriber to that program, to that newsletter. Everything we do is archived, so you can download all of our shows going back to 2001, or you can listen to each and every one of them right off of our website. Excuse me. Remember, we also have a guest search tool on our website. You can't miss it. And here you can do global searches for your favorite space term like radiation or microgravity, as well as your favorite guest to see if they were ever on the show and when. And then you just go back to our website and go to our archives at the bottom of the homepage and pull up those programs by date. And hopefully you'll find that useful. We have a store on our website. You'll see it up near the top. It's called Space Show Gear. Please do check it out. And then above all, probably the most important button there is called Support the Space Show. Remember, we're a 501c3 nonprofit with the OneGiantLeapFoundation.org. And this show does exist because many of you are generous and support us with your contributions. Remember, if you pay U.S. taxes, you do get a federal tax deduction. If you pay California taxes, you get a California state deduction, as we're a California public benefit corporation. And then if you do have any questions, check out the OneGiantLeapFoundation.org website or get a hold of me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. And do also remember that we are podcasting, and you can find the podcasting RSS URL to subscribe to our podcast on our website, both of our newsletters, and we're in a host of places such as iTunes, Microsoft, Zoom, and quite a few other places. Also, we're trademarked and copyrighted, so you do have permission to download the programs. They are compressed MP3s, and you can share them and distribute them. But please don't do anything commercial. Don't edit the programs. No Space Show YouTube channels or anything like that. And written transcripts are not permitted, even if they're for your own private use. And we appreciate your honoring our request here. And if you have any questions, do let me hear from you. And I'll do my best to respond to each and every one of you. And then finally, do remember that we are partially sponsored by the Secure World Foundation, and they promote cooperative solutions for space security. For more information, you can visit their website, secureworldfoundation.org. And this brings me to our program today, and I'm really happy to bring back to the Space Show Ed Buckby. And Ed is quite an author. I'm sure you're familiar with many of his books. The Real Space Cowboys is one of them. It was published by Apogee. Also, Rockets and Spacecraft. And then he has a book about Wernher von Braun, The Rocket Man. And in fact, we're going to be talking a lot about von Braun today and human spaceflight. In addition, Ed has attended so many launches, I envy him. He attended the launches of Alan Shepard and John Glenn, and he was present when Apollo lifted off for all of its moon landings. And he still works with the space program. He has met and worked with all the astronauts from the early Mercury and Gemini period through the Apollo period. He's over at the von Braun Center at the U.S. Space and Rocket Museum in Huntsville. And he recently was awarded the very, very high honor and the medal of the Wernher von Braun Gold Medal for his support of human spaceflight. And he was in Germany and just recently picked up this award. His website, which you all should check out and visit, is www.air-space, you know, SPACE.com. And Ed, welcome to the Space Show. How are you?
Oh, good, David. Thanks. Nice to be here.
Always a pleasure. Human spaceflight seems to be is wobbly a good word for it today?
Well, it certainly is in this part of the country, Huntsville, Alabama, the Rocket City. You know, we started manned flight in this community back in May of 1961. In fact, I was just kind of looking back through files not long ago and ran across the press release that we put together for Alan Shepard's flight, and you know, in 61, and that was my first attempt to watch a manned flight, and it was a little old Redstone rocket, and you know, it had one stager and had a spacecraft on top, and sure enough, we put Alan Shepard aboard, and that was the beginning of what we called manned rated rockets and manned space flight. And of course, von Braun was he was the head of that team, and we took our guys down to Cape and borrowed Air Force launch pads and began space flight in 61. And we have been doing that for, over just about 50 years of flight. And, of course, we just recently closed down the shuttle program, which was a sad day for all of us when we saw that machine retired. In fact, I saw it on TV flying over Washington this week as it was going into the Dulles to be retired at the National Air and Space Museum. So, yeah, so we have really enjoyed the human spaceflight business in this community, and I certainly haven't had a great career, working in it and then writing about it and now talking about it with many of my astronaut friends.
Well, and of course, then to listeners of this show, there's a huge interest in human spaceflight, and it's really something to see that it's kind of struggling. And just to bring it full circle, this week, both the Senate and the House subcommittee have strongly suggested that we reduce the commercial crew funding even more and beef up some other parts of the program with that money that they would save from putting it on commercial crew. So since commercial crew seems to be our only way into space with astronauts with an American flag on the vehicle, it seems to me we're really self-destructive to be reducing the funding and slowing it down. I don't understand it. Not only are we buying rides at very high prices from the Russians, but we surrender a little bit each time of our own sovereignty by having to do this, because we have to play ball with people that don't always see eye to eye with us on different international and global issues. I would not be cutting funding on commercial crew, but that's what we're doing. So human spaceflight is, I think, a big concern to those of us who really like it. Thank God for the private sector. I sure hope they're successful, and all the best to SpaceX for April 30th.
Absolutely, you know, and my travels in Europe, I guess I was surprised with the concern that others have about the lack of a human spaceflight program in the U.S. People in Germany and in France and the U.K. were you know, somewhat surprised that we had allowed ourselves to get in a situation where we did not have a human-rated vehicle to take our guys and gals into space and the station. And I think it was something that they weren't prepared for, and they were surprised, I think, that we shut down the shuttle program without having a replacement rocket. And I think we'll look back on that decision as a mistake. And, you know, we suffered through that in the 70s when we went out of the Saturn V business into the shuttle business. We had a major gap, but at least there was a machine coming online. Now we're far from having a machine come online that's man-rated and ready to go. So I agree with you. We totally are dependent upon the commercial people right now to get us back in the business. And, you know, a lot of people seem to want to say, well, the government shouldn't be paying for two programs, one for a government rocket and one for a commercial rocket. But I don't think NASA can be accused of paying for other than paying for services, which is really what we should be doing, is providing services through the commercial people, and that's what they've done. The commercial people have invested some serious money, you know, of their own, so that speaks well, I think, for them. I think NASA basically is decided we'll pay for the services, and so far that's what we're seeing. So I agree with you. I think we really need the commercial people to step up and make that possible, that low Earth orbit capability, and let the NASA government folks go away and work on the big rocket to go beyond Earth orbit and so forth. Because, you know, we haven't been out of Earth orbit since 1972, and that's another great surprise to me and my generation, of the people that worked on Apollo and Saturn, the fact that we have not been able to get out of Earth orbit with a human cargo since 72. And hopefully we can see this change. And I know it's going to be a few years, but I have confidence that these people that are involved in this space launch system certainly know what to do and know how to do it. We just have to get out of their way and let them go design that machine.
Absolutely. And since there is government funding involved, I go back to the fact that they should not be reducing the funding for commercial crew. In fact, in my way of thinking, Ed, space is such an important and a valuable program on so many levels for the country. I would not be cutting it in the budget no matter what. I mean, if anything, I'm on the side of Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, where we ought to be putting a full 1%. Yes. Instead of half of 1% into NASA and space-related programs, not on the DOD side, but on the civil side. But, you know, clearly that's not happening. It's being downsized just like the other parts of the government for spending other than entitlements. Maybe space should somehow become an entitlement. What do you think?
That would be great. You know, the younger generation is another concern I have. The guys and gals coming out of the you know, university systems with degrees in science and technology are looking around at NASA and you know, they don't see any future there, and that's really a detriment to our young people and their future plans, is the fact that we really don't have a program that is solid enough for them to feel like, well, this is a career I want to pursue. And so that's another concern. NASA in the old days would be a fertile ground for young men and women who wanted to pursue a technology career. Now it's just very, very bleak in that field, and consequently when you go to engineering schools today, in this country, you see a decline in the enrollment in the engineering schools. And I think that's something that we're going to pay dearly for in the future.
Well, tell us about this prestigious Von Braun Gold Medal Award that you got.
Well, I was invited to the Technical University in Munich, and this is where they held the there's an international organization that promotes spaceflight. And this international organization was founded by Hermann Oberth and Wernher von Braun back in the 50s. And periodically they award the Wernher von Braun Gold Medal to people who have promoted and supported spaceflight, human spaceflight. And I was selected to receive the award this year, the Wernher von Braun Gold Medal Award, by this association. And I accepted it on behalf of myself and all the guys and gals that worked in Huntsville, Alabama on the Saturn vehicle and the lunar landing program. And it was, people like Dr. Ernst Stuhlinger, Walter Horzemann, and others have received that award in the past. And so I was very honored, and it's probably, no doubt, the highest honor I've ever had bestowed upon me. And I think a part of it, too, was the fact that I worked promoting Space Camp for the younger generation. We have over 500,000 kids from all over the world that have gone through Space Camp and graduated. So that was another reason why I received the award. And, of course, that Space Camp program was conceived by Wernher von Braun. He always was thinking of the future, always looking at the next generation of engineers and innovators and so forth. So consequently, we had a great time celebrating that event in Munich.
Is Space Camp still going strong? Have you seen any attendance drop off or anything like that?
Actually, Space Camp is doing better than it has. There's a new CEO that's taken over that program, and they had a couple movies made about Space Camp. They have another one coming online. It's really kind of found its second wind, you might say. It's a lot more popular than it was a few years ago, and I think because youngsters don't have a shuttle program to monitor, to watch, they're looking for a substitute, and it appears that Space Camp may be kind of that special experience that they can get where no one else is offering anything in the space world. So, yes, it's back doing well. I saw some numbers this week. Nearly 8,000 were registered so far for the summer, and they're expecting around 10,000 to participate this year. So it is back on track and seeming to do quite well.
Well, that's good news if they hold their interest as they go ahead and get older. What are the typical ages for Space Camp kids?
They start out at 9 and go through 14, 15, and they have an advanced program as well. But it's the 9, 10, and 11, 12-year-olds that really seem to be attracted to that program, and it's done very well. And by the way, they have three lady astronauts that have graduated from Space Camp that have now gone into the astronaut program, so they're very proud of the fact that now they have three ladies that have qualified and one has flown. So it's and by the way, there's literally hundreds of graduates that I hear from that now work in various organizations and aerospace companies related to NASA. And so it's really paid off over the years, because it's going to actually celebrate its 30th anniversary this summer. And so a lot of those guys and gals are obviously in the workforce doing their thing. And I run into them frequently at NASA and in companies like Boeing and Lockheed Martin, who started off, in Space Camp when they were a young guy or gal and decided to pursue that career, and consequently they're in the business. So I am pleased to see a few of them show up anyway.
My older son went to Space Camp when he was pretty young, and when it was in Orlando, but now it's all just in Huntsville, correct?
That's correct. Only one left.
Only one left, and yeah. It's the Huntsville Center.
That's right.
Listeners, I would urge you to consider that as a camp for your kids. My son had a great experience there, and he's not in the space field, but it was still a memorable experience and a good all around experience. And having been to space camp in the Rocket Center in Huntsville, it is one cool place to spend your summer. Let's put it that way.
It's still got a lot of exciting simulators. The teams that are assigned to space camp are very competitive, and you really appreciate the excitement that these young people acquire going through a space camp experience, going through a mission, and so forth. So now they're working on more advanced missions, like going to other planets, going to the moon, and things like that. So they're trying to expand a little bit beyond the space shuttle program.
So here's your first question. This is Alex is in Portland, Oregon, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Alex says, good morning, Ed. Here's my question. Many people think that in order to rejuvenate the space program, I guess they mean the human space program, there needs to be a set of dynamic personalities like there was with Von Braun, Disney, and a few others that were able to capture the minds and the visions of general, ordinary Americans. And so the program had support across wide segments of the population, at least until the end of the Apollo program. Do you think that the need here is for a personality-driven leader, or is there another way to rekindle not the Apollo program, but the spirit that was behind that from the general population and most of the people in Congress before they lost interest in Apollo?
Well, I think it is a situation where you have to have a leader who has a vision, and we were extremely fortunate to have the John F. Kennedy president in place, and we had people like Warner Von Braun, and Kurt Debus and Dr. Gilruth in Houston, and a lot of Pickering and Van Allen, people with very creative minds and visions that could convince people like myself and others that we could create a capability to fly in space and fly humans successfully. And then it also helped that we had some competition at that time with the Russians. And certainly that probably gave us a little more drive to be successful and going to the moon, particularly within the decade. But I think the fact that there was people like President Kennedy who could take that message to the public and convince them that this was something the country could do and should do to maintain its world-class reputation and certainly the leader in technology. So that's what enabled us to go to the moon, and I think the Russian competition certainly didn't hurt. Today, we just don't have that personality. We don't have that leadership to create the vision and then to make people understand that it is doable and we can accomplish these types of technology feats. So the other problem that I see, too, is Congress constantly meddles in NASA's business. They're telling the NASA people, who, by the way, are as bright as any we've ever had, they're constantly telling them how to design their rocket, how big to make it, what type of rocket to make, and I think that's just not the job of the Congress. I think the Congress needs to set the policy, approve budgets, and get out of the way. The NASA people and their aerospace contractors know how to develop rockets, know how to invent them and build them and make them successful. So consequently, if we could get that settled, I think it would be a great feat. If you look back at the last several years, every time a new administration comes in, we get a new rocket. And the NASA people have to stop, retrack, and start over again. And you can't do this. You can't do a rocket program in 4 years. There's no way you can make a new one function that quickly. So that's something that's really going to help if we can get the politicians out of the NASA business and let the NASA people go off and develop their rocket. And this, and the other part of that is we need a mission. Right now, there's not a specific mission for the Space Launch System. It's a rocket. It's supposed to do everything. That's not going to, in my opinion, that's not going to work in the long run. We need to define what that rocket needs to do, where it's going to go, what its mission will be, and then go off and do it. So there's some things to be worked out and straightened out. Hopefully Congress will get out of the way and let NASA go off and do that.
Of course, I also think timelines are crucial and helpful, having things just vague and hanging out there without a timeline with goals that you have to meet, you know, and milestones. Even if you slip on some of the timeline, I think the timelines are crucial, but we don't seem to have that for SLS. And what we do have slips anyway. So,
sure.
You got a question from Ted Spitzmiller. He's another well-known author. And he says, gentlemen, the essential problem of our human space program is one of motivation. You're discussing an aspect of that right now. We don't have the same compelling reasons to go beyond LEO as we had with Apollo. Time may reveal new urgent reasons. The Chinese are coming, that's in parentheses. On top of that, we have to borrow 40 cents of every dollar we spend from foreign sources, from China, for example. We have to get our federal, I guess he means spending, under control. We continually say how much the ISS is providing breakthrough research, such as bioresearch and microgravity, yet I have yet to hear NASA make any definitive assessment of this kind of progress. A few thoughts. Do you have any comments?
Well, my feeling about the Chinese is that we need to be on the high ground. The Chinese, when they go to the moon, they won't land and depart like we did six times. They will stay. In my view, they will declare territorial rights to the property they land on, and they'll remain there. And I think that's a critical situation. I think we should be there and also occupy the high ground. That's one of the reasons why we went to the moon with the Russians. The competition is we wanted to be sure we occupied the high ground for lots of reasons. If you have control of the high ground, you can monitor your assets from that position a lot easier. Secondly, it shows the rest of the world that you have the technology, you have the smarts to figure out how to get there and get back, and that's something that we have not done since 72, be able to put a human cargo outside of Earth orbit. And the rest of the world is going to recognize that when they find and see that the Chinese are the only country that's beyond Earth orbit. So I think we have a challenge there to convince people that we need to go back, if nothing more, just to establish a research base there, a stepping stone, you might say, and certainly have people on a regular basis. And that's what Von Braun wanted to do back at the end of the 60s and early 70s, was create a lunar base that we could rotate crews and continue our research. And that was the plan, but we obviously shut that down and never went back after we had landed six times. But I do think it's a good target. It's only 3 days by rocket, and a lot of times we forget that. And we can get there and get back safely. And we know how to do that, and it's a darn good place to train our people and to all continue that research. And we might even accomplish a lot more on the moon than we have with space station. I'm not really that pleased with the research that's been advanced on station. Maybe in time we'll see more results, but right now it's not something that you can go out and brag about, because we haven't had any very unique things occur out of it other than the study of the human astronauts that have been on board. And, of course, that's something we learned a lot about. But as far as new products and so forth, that's been pretty slim.
A lot of people, and I'm noticing this is a change over, I guess, 6 months of guests on the space show. I think 6 months is a good time period to note this change, and that is – overwhelmingly, even from people that were on the show a year and a half ago, they have abandoned the hope or the idea that the U.S. government is going back to the moon. And they say, we will go back to the moon, and it's all going to be done by the private companies on a commercial basis. I don't think in the last 6 months that I've talked to more than two or three or four guests that think the U.S. government is going to do that. Now, that they all wish the U.S. government would do it. But everybody seems to have abdicated the U.S. government as a possibility, as a lunar player for the private sector. And they're all, you know, on the bandwagon for SpaceX and some of these others to be successful because they see that as the way out of this mess. Your thoughts, do you think the U.S. might have a lunar settlement policy, or are we looking only to the private sector now?
Well, at the moment, it looks like the private sector is the only ride that could be going to the moon. With one exception, I do hear occasionally some of the defense people, our defense people, expressing concern about letting the Chinese have full free run of the lunar surface. I don't know if that's going to be something that will become a part of the decision-making process or not, where the DOD people become interested in the moon, particularly once the Chinese have really shown they've got that capability. Maybe that will be an opportunity for us to see some new ideas come up and new reasons for going to the moon. Right now, I agree with you. NASA doesn't seem to have it on their list as anything they think they can accomplish or they want to accomplish. So, you know, the private sector, if they can figure out how to make some money out of lunar missions, that would be a great reason to go there. And you know, you see some competition between the private companies going after something, helium-3 or whatever it might be. But right now, I don't know how the private companies can justify going to the moon based on NASA's not going to pay them for any services. So I don't know how they can justify missions unless they have just, you know, someone comes up with the kind of money that they need just to create a private sector mission and have it come off. You know, there's very little money flowing to people who can go to the moon with a specific mission and make a buck off of it. Other than some of the prizes that we've heard about, and those are small numbers compared to what you really need. So I guess it's going to take the Chinese really showing the rest of us that they can actually accomplish a successful mission, and as that begins to develop, that could influence more people in the country to pay attention to another mission.
Did I hear you right where you said that the DOD had you were hearing rumors that they might just have a policy to allow China free run of the lunar surface? Why would the DOD have that as a policy, or did I misunderstand
you? I don't think it's a policy. I don't want to say it's a policy. I want to say that I've had some DOD people express concern about the Chinese having a free run of the moon.
Oh, okay. So they're not encouraging it or wanting it. They're concerned about it as a reality.
Exactly. There's some that are concerned that we're just letting the Chinese go and kind of conquer the moon, create their own base of operations, and have the high ground, complete control of the high ground. That's a concern of some of the DOD people I've spoken to.
Well, and of course, what our policy should be toward China, this isn't really a show about political policy, but it runs across the board, you know, from people who think they're our best friends ever and to be fully engaged commercially with them, to people who shout, you know, warning, danger, danger, Will Robinson, you know, from every street corner. So, you know, it runs the gamut, and of course they own a lot of our debt, so in a sense, we lose a little bit of sovereignty when we finance our government operations to foreigners, no matter who the foreign entity might be.
True.
So these are all issues to take into consideration. So what about the space tourism industry? Do you think that there's a potential there to be an economic driver? I know, for example, that the Falcon 9 and Dragon is set up to handle space tourism on an orbital basis. Bigelow might actually get a ride to deploy his space stations and get people up there, which would be a market for space tourism. How do you see that unfolding? And also, if you want, you can comment on what you think the suborbital space tourism market will unfold like.
You know, I wouldn't want to depend upon the space tourism market to carry us over the long haul. I do think that there's some interest there, but it's, you know, a business plan of looking down the road at a continuous flow of business through tourism, space tourism, makes me a little nervous. I certainly don't think our country should base its future space program on space tourism. I really hope we don't have to do that. I love to see it be successful and see those companies do well, but you know we still need a NASA government program, and I think that's something that we cannot let the Congress and others decide that, well, we just turn this over to the private, completely turn it over to the private sector. I love to see the private sector continue to make money off of space, and I hope they can. But I think we also have to have a strong NASA exploration program that's funded like we did with the Apollo program, with the shuttle program. And those programs aren't, you know, they're not bringing dollars and cents back in to people's pockets, but they give us that technology advancement and a technology, you might say, a technology lead on all the other countries in the world when they know that the U.S. has enough smart people to figure out how to build a shuttle and operate a machine like that that's never been done before. That's where I think NASA and the space program has made a great contribution, is the advancement of technology. You know, we had no idea of the things that we were going to bring back from the moon being of value to us, rocks and so forth. But what the effort it took, the innovation it took to get those guys to the moon and back safely, those advancements, that technology has paid off in so many different ways that I don't want to take the time to try to cover all that. But it was solving the problems of going to the moon and coming back is what was so valuable and was fed out of the NASA organizations and the private sector companies into the other industry that is really the payoff from space travel. And so we just, you know, we take that for granted. And unfortunately, we have not really used that as a basis for our next goal and our next objectives in space travel. We really haven't paid a lot of attention to what we've gained in the past. And that's something we, you know, I worked at NASA for, you know, about 20 years, and we failed to get that point across in Apollo. We really didn't bring that message home to the public of what you've gained from the space program, and we still haven't done it.
Yeah, we don't. We say all the time we don't tell the story well, but
we don't. We're the wrong people. We're not salesmen. You know, we're not marketeers, and that's the problem of all these years. The NASA people have never been able to tell their story.
Although I have had guests on the show, and they say it's not about telling the story well. It's that the story doesn't resonate with the new modern generation of Americans with different issues, different concerns. And space isn't valued the way we in the space enthusiast community value it. And so it's not so much about the story to be told. It's that everything is changing in our society, our culture, our requirements, our needs, our focus. And the space story isn't necessarily keeping up with how we as a nation and as a society and as our needs are changing. You have another caller. Let's see if they're still with us. Hi, caller. Are you still with us, please?
Yeah, this is Terry in Corpus Christi.
Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Hey, Terry.
Ed, with the reduced funding for commercial crew, do you think we're realistically looking at at 2018 or later to get to the ISS?
I surely hope not. I think real important is how well SpaceX performs here in the next on this next mission. And you've got a couple other companies, Orbital and others, that are, you know, they're close. And I think a lot will depend on some of these next missions before we get into seeing, you know, changing the dates and so forth. You know, I'm really hopeful that SpaceX can pull this next mission off. And, you know, the thing about that mission is they're going to recover that.
That 1:30 is a better time than 2, so if you can make that earlier, that'd be great. And,
yeah, and I think the fact that not only are they going to dock, but they're going to recover, I think that's a big step for them.
435-2710.
Do you think that they're probably going to down select to two companies for commercial space?
1:30 is actually going to work.
Good question. Good question. You know, the money's not going to run out. I mean, the money's not going to be able to be continually to flow into those private companies. They're going to have a lot of people watching, you know, that money and how much it goes to the private companies. So it may be that you will see some kind of a competition or some kind of criteria established that we haven't seen or heard that could cause them to down select. It's a possibility, especially if you have if you have two really good successful missions, it may be you may see something like that happen.
One last question, and I'll free up the line. You've been in Germany. What is the average German's, the younger German's opinion of von Braun?
It's an interesting question. The older generation, of course, finds him as a part of the Third Reich, which is, as you know, that's the 15 years of bad history for the country. The younger generation is trying to decide where he fits. You know, does he fit in the technology advancement world, or is he a member of the Third Reich? So you really have a split situation, as best I could tell. Some of the young men and women I ran into were very impressed with the technology that von Braun enabled to bring to this country, and also it went to Russia as well, as you know. And they're impressed with the fact that all that stems from German brain power. German brain power enabled us to you know, create a human spaceflight program in this country and the Russians as well. So you have some of that. But then one of the things that I noticed was they require, in their educational system in Germany, they require young people in a certain grade, I think it's the fifth grade, to go into a concentration camp and you know, see that and experience that themselves. So Germany is really torn. I think the country is torn between how do we handle our past 15-year period, and how do we deal with the future and technology. So I saw a mixture to answer your question. The younger people want to think that Germany made some wonderful technology advancements. The older generation is afraid to not forget what bad things happened in their country, especially during that 15-year period. So when you read history, you realize that that country had a terrible time after World War I. They were just, you know, down and out, and this guy comes along, this guy Hitler comes along and picks them all up, and they get excited and they start progressing and make great advancements in technology. And then the next thing you know, they go into this terrible war, and the atrocities happen, and they lose track of what's happened to their country, and then of course they're defeated. So you have a very strong mixture of feelings that it's difficult to say one way, one or the other. It's really, I think, more of a split would be my guess.
Well, Ed, it's been a joy talking to you. I appreciate you coming on the show, and I'll free up the line for somebody else.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Listeners, the line is free, 1-866-687-7223. Let me follow up Terry's question about what do the younger Germans think about von Braun or their culture about von Braun over there. What's your take on how Americans see von Braun? In general, do we really understand his history, the background? Do we not in general know about his that he was a major in the SS? I mean, what happened at Pentamolte? I mean, what's our educational and cultural awareness from what you can tell about Americans in von Braun?
Oh, it's very low, David. There's very little history understood of von Braun and his team in Peenemünde and what occurred there. It's more about what I see is they're aware of his work in the U.S. Yes, that seems to be the part that they understand, and it's in the last few years where historians and curators have come up with the background on von Braun that's caused some concerns about his history and his contribution. And I hear that pretty often myself since I worked for him and give a lot of presentations on von Braun. I get that question quite often. Well, he was a member of the SS. He was a Nazi and so forth. And, you know, I have to remember that he was, and that we selected, our government selected 120 of those guys to come over here to teach us how to build rockets. And when you look back on von Braun, he was a member of the Nazi Party. I would not say he was a card-carrying Nazi, nor was he one that went to the meetings and so forth, but he really didn't have much choice. He worked for the German army, R&D people, and he basically had no choice. If he wanted to continue to be in that business,
right,
he had to become a member of the Nazi Party. But, you know, I also remind myself that six presidents of this country consulted with von Braun, trusted von Braun, and honored von Braun. From Eisenhower to Jimmy Carter, six presidents called upon him to help them solve the problems of missiles, first of all, missiles, and secondly, beating the Russians to the moon. So, you know, we certainly got, this country certainly was rewarded from his technology contributions and his brain power. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say I'm sort of a minor, you know, history buff on von Braun, and I have looked for it, and I cannot find it, of any trace of his Nazi activities or leanings or ideology in anything that he did once he came to America. It just was not part of him or the team that I can find. Now, again, I'm not the commensurate scholar on this, but I just don't see it being an issue. I mean, he was devoted to getting us into space, to building the rockets. He wanted to go to Mars. He talked to the public. God, we wish we had a NASA director today who could talk to the public the way von Braun did.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't see any representation of his background that came with him over to America. But, again, I'm not the best scholar on this subject.
You're right, David. And I've read the investigative papers on not just von Braun, but almost all 120. And let me tell you, those guys, they were carefully reviewed, investigated, interrogated before they ever got out of Germany and actually became, in fact, they weren't even allowed to become citizens until 1956. They were in this country several years before they were allowed to become citizens.
Yeah, and they were guests of the army, so to speak.
Yeah, we actually call them prisoners of peace.
Prisoners of peace, right.
And they were controlled. And I can assure you there was a huge amount of investigation that went in to that. And some, by the way, there were people turned away that were not allowed to come with the von Braun team that had questionable background. that was uncovered in those investigations. I think what is said about Von Braun today, and I've not been able to find anything that causes me to believe he was a serious Nazi member. The thing that some people hold him responsible for, that he failed morally to respond to the slave labor,
right,
that were used to build his rocket. And that is the strongest, you know, negative thing I've heard expressed about him, that he had a moral obligation, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I don't know what he was supposed to do, you know, if he had that, what action was he supposed to take? I mean, it was pretty obvious about the mid-40s that Germany was going to lose the war, and, you know, they knew that something was going to happen, and the whole team voted to surrender to the U.S. immediately. There wasn't any discussion, I'm told. It was like 100% said, we're going to get out of here as soon as we can. We're going to surrender to the U.S. because that's where we think we can contribute our technology. And all of them wanted to go into space, of course. And that was the thing that Von Braun was looking forward to, was finding somewhere to work on his rockets that enable him to fly in space. Consequently, we were lucky. And as I say, six presidents trusted this man and honored him. And, you know, he took us to the moon, and I'm not sure we would have ever gotten to the moon without his leadership and that team's effort in the 60s.
And, I've been fortunate to have a couple of them on the show. They've all passed away now, the ones that were on the show. And, boy, I didn't ask them about their Nazi background. I thought that would be way over the top for the space show. But I really didn't get a sense of anything from them other than just an unbelievable commitment to be able to go to the moon, work the hardware, build the hardware, and do the mission. And that was kind of my takeaway from talking to all of these people. And anyway, you've got another question that goes back to China, which we were discussing a few minutes ago. This is from Ted again. Can the Chinese perform human spaceflight any more economically than we can? Can they develop inexpensive access to low Earth orbit? That is where we should be placing our emphasis. Right now, space tourism is an expensive carnival ride. It is not forging new technology. Any comments on what Ted has to say?
Well, Ted, you may have touched on something. Rumor is that the Chinese are going to go into what they call commercial spaceflight themselves. You know, their program is embedded in the military, kind of like we were back in the 50s when we were all part of the military services. We were flying Army rockets and Air Force missiles and so forth. That's what China's doing today. They're basically all mixed in the same organization. But there's talk about Chinese breaking out and developing their own commercial launch site, going into competition with ESA and others around the world, and being able to offer tourism and others, commercial people, a ride. And you can be assured if they do that, it's going to be cheaper. And so you might want to keep an eye out for that development over in the China world, a so-called commercial venture by the Chinese to go into competition with the rest of the world in spaceflight.
You know, one thing to keep in mind is that China is not a market-driven economy. I'm not saying ours is the best, but we don't, for the most part, we don't have a planned government economy, but China does. So
yes,
the ability to even cost out your variable labor and your overhead in an economy like China is almost impossible to do. It's like the old Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
So you really don't know what the costs are for this or that. And we all know their labor rate is unbelievably low.
Yes.
So you know, part of all of this is it's a totalitarian regime, and if the government decides they want to spend money on space, they don't have to worry about a Congress, they don't have to worry about the population, you know, protesting, saying, no, we want food stamps, we want this, we want... Mm-hmm. I mean, that just doesn't exist over there.
Yeah.
So you can't talk about their cost in the same way you talk about our cost for space access, because their cost could be anything they determine is their government's policy. And
exactly.
And they can play with the numbers on their labor and manufacturing and real estate and whatever else goes into it pretty much any way, you know, they want, because they control how they spend, what they spend on, what they want to do. And too bad, if you have a different opinion, keep your mouth shut. So
I think that's something to be
aware of, at least.
Be aware of.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if you don't see a commercial Chinese development take place for space travel.
You have another caller. Hi, caller. Are you still with us, please? Hello?
This is Ted, Dave. You hear me?
Oh, good. You're on. We're just talking about your last email.
Yeah. There was a little bit of disassociation. I was listening to the aspect on Von Braun, and then when you got connected, you were talking about the Chinese.
Okay, so the cardinal rule is you have to kill your computer feed because they're not in sync, and you'll be totally discombobulated more than our human spaceflight program is.
Well, if I could just take a second and go back and suggest to your listeners that they read Michael Neufeld's Von Braun.
Yeah, he's also actually been on the show when that book came out.
And excellent book.
You can find his show about Von Braun. Yeah, it's probably one of the best history books on Von Braun.
But moving to your contemporary conversation about the Chinese.
Hold on one at a time. What, Ed?
I would also recommend reading Dr. Space by Bob Ward on Von Braun. Dr. Space, The Life of Wernher von Braun by Bob Ward is a book that was done by a gentleman that lives in Huntsville, knew Von Braun for the whole time he was here, living here, and that book is worth your time as well.
And he was on the space show, too, so you could do a guest search, global search, for both Michael Neufeld and Bob Ward, and
right.
you would get their programs and see what they said about their books. Go ahead, Ted.
Well, I think the thread that you were currently working with the Chinese and their economy and not having a need to relate to their populace, the voter,
mm-hmm.
use that
loosely.
Loosely, I think is very appropriate, because if you actually look at the amount of dollars that the United States spends in NASA, it's minuscule compared to our budget. The problem is that we've got so many other things that compete for that minuscule dollar. I mean, when we say minuscule, we're talking $20 billion, which overall is not significant with respect to the rest of the budget. But again, you have to remember where we're getting that money from, and you mentioned that, borrowing it from international bankers. And the real thing is, what is driving us to spend this money? To me, that's what I think we need to be looking at, is what is our incentive to go out there? I don't see any incentive to go back to the moon. Now, we can talk about helium-3 and things
yeah.
like that, but we haven't even solved the fusion problem. We don't need the helium-3 at this point. For me, I'd like to go on to Mars. I think that's a real exciting situation, but it's so far into the future, even if the president said we're going to Mars, it would probably be 2 or 3 decades. Can we keep a focus over that period of time? I don't know, but to me, Mars is the exciting place.
Well, of course, I'm one of those who believes the path to Mars goes through a lunar settlement and learning how to live in space and work in space and do things in space that we currently can't do. But I do know there are others that don't believe the path to Mars goes through the moon. And, you know, maybe someday we'll all be fortunate to find out if there's even a path to Mars.
Yeah.
Ed, what do you think?
Well, let me go back and kind of recreate the Von Braun deal. And that was go back to the moon with a permanent base, use that as your research operation, and don't necessarily depend on it to provide you resources to get to Mars, but to be able to train the people and test your equipment. You know, the lunar module, testing the lunar module was a huge problem because we couldn't fly the dang-gone thing in the atmosphere, and we had to take it to the moon and actually test it. So his thought was, let's put a base on the moon, and we'll use that as we would use as a training site, and then we jump off and go to Mars. If he were on the show today, Von Braun would be talking about an international mission to Mars. He would be telling us, listen, we can't do this alone. It's got to be, you know, 5, 6, 7 countries together, and we've got to convince ourselves it's going to be an advancement in technology and a true exploration of the planets. And nobody can remember the name of the robot, you know, that walks on the Mars or the other planet, but they certainly can remember if there's a guy or a gal in the cockpit. And I'm often reminded of Von Braun's, one of his favorite stories was telling the day that Neil landed on the moon, he started to come down and land in the spot they selected for him. Turned out it was a crater, and if he had landed in that crater, he would have not been able to climb out of the thing. It was so deep and so wide, we might have had our first crew stranded on the moon. At the last few seconds, he put that thing in a hover position, moved over, and with about 17 seconds of gas in the tank, landed on a level ground. That happened because there was a guy in the cockpit. And Von Braun loved to tell that story to remind people that's why you send manned humans in spacecraft to other planets, because you have that capability with the human involved, and you can change the mission instantly. So I think he would be all for a Mars mission. Well, I know he was, because he tried to sell it to the president and others in the 1969 time frame to land by 1982. That was his mission year to land. So I know he wanted to do it. But I think today he would have the international package in mind, and that's what he would be peddling, and that's what he would be selling around the world, would be an international mission to Mars.
Dave, I'm going to clear your line now. Thank you very much, Ed.
Thank you, Ted.
Thank you.
Listeners, that does free up our line, 1-866-687-7223, if you'd like to call. And we're at an hour into the program. We're going to take our first break. We're a little behind the eight ball on that. And we'll be back with Ed Buckby in 3 minutes. Please don't go anywhere.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
I'm Dr. David Livingston, creator and host of the Space Show, and I would like to share my vision with you for not only this radio program, but for space development. Space should be like any other place we choose to visit, work in, or call our home. It should be just another destination, like Tahiti, Hawaii, or any place available to us right now on Earth. When this vision becomes reality, we will be spacefaring in our culture, our economy, our society, and in our lives. Our world will be vastly improved by countless space-related benefits, transforming our lives both in space and right here on Earth. And the Space Show is helping to make this vision a global reality. And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to part two of our Friday Space Show program. Our guest today, Ed Buckby. We're talking about a lot of things, but mostly Wernher von Braun. And you have a question from Terry, and he says, please ask Ed if Eisenhower's private thoughts were negative about von Braun after being Allied Supreme Commander just a few years earlier.
You know, that's a good question. And I found out that they were not, because Eisenhower, of course, created NASA, and we have to give him credit for being a smart man, in my view, to take the bright people that he did from various military organizations and pool them into a whole brand new agency called NASA in 1958. And he personally picked Von Braun and his team to be moved into that organization. And on top of that, he selected his former general friend, George C. Marshall, to become the name, to actually be named the center that Von Braun became the director of. And I remember that turnover ceremony that was held in 1960, and Eisenhower came to Huntsville, and he was extremely proud of the fact that Von Braun was going to become the first director of the George C. Marshall Space Flight Center. And so, yes, I think you can safely say that they had passed beyond that military engagement they had had in World War II, and Eisenhower had a whole different attitude toward the Germans. And, you know, a lot of my buddies that came to work in that time frame were World War II vets who had gone on the GI Bill, had gone to school, got their engineering degree, and came to work for Von Braun. And you never heard anyone have anything derogatory to say about the Germans. And there were a bunch of World War II vets that came to work for him in the rocket booth.
That's pretty much what I have heard, too. So I would think if privately, you know, I didn't like him, he wouldn't have put him in these positions.
No, he would have definitely not selected him to be the head of the George C. Marshall Space Flight Center.
So how do you see our future moving forward? It looks like if we use the and we're just now basically talking NASA, but if we use the president's proposed fiscal year 13 budget and what came out of the Senate and House subcommittee hearings last week or earlier this week, you know, it appears that SLS and James Webb Space Telescope are receiving you know, the bigger parts of the budget. You know, there's an effort to have some kind of a Mars program in 2018. They have allocated another $100 million to that. And rather than the $830 million for commercial crew, which is our only way right now to go to the space station, they're cutting that by $305 million or something like that. Of course, we don't know what the finals will be that the president signs. But that's kind of a nutshell of where we are. We've got a planetary and science program that's been pretty much decimated because of cost overruns on James Webb. And we're seeing SLS take the brunt of money on the other side of the coin. Is this any way to run a space program? I mean, I'm a big fan of James Webb. I can't stomach the thought of canceling the program. But I understand what it's doing.
Well, it's when you have, you know, limited funds to work with, you always have that. You always worry about one of those big projects, you know, being canceled, and I think that's the fear that our people in NASA right now are faced with. You know, I've come up with my position is right now is I really believe NASA should get out of the aeronautics business. And I feel like they're not really paying that much attention to aeronautics anyway. And why not let that go to FAA or someone else and let NASA concentrate on space, 100% on space. And that way there's no confusion as what their budget might be, and they're not moving money from one to the other, and we concentrate on these space programs. And I do think sometimes NASA gets spread through too many different projects, and it thins out the budget, and consequently, if you do get into a bind on one big project, you know, you have this kill factor comes in because they say, well, we got to kill this big project. Sometimes I think it's better for them to concentrate maybe on two or three major programs, and we let everything else sort of go away. I don't know if that can be worked out or not, because you have so many other field centers and other people, politicians in particular, you know, protecting their own backyard. So it's sometimes difficult to get that, you might say, consolidated programs together. But I really think sometimes NASA needs to concentrate on the big programs and let these smaller vehicle programs and research programs go away and maybe become parts of universities and in research institutes. A lot of that could be done probably quite well in the research world, especially in academia, and NASA could, what I would say, concentrate on the big hardware programs.
Sort of related, but not that related, is a news item I just picked up off of Alan Boyle and Cosmic Log. So, and it just came in a few minutes ago, so it's worth asking you about. So, the title of his headline on the article is "Astronauts Are Revisiting the Shuttle Debate." So, apparently, after Discovery has been handed over to the museum in Washington, D.C., and all of the press that it got and the pictures of it leaving the Cape and flying over to Dulles Airport, the debate seems to be coming back. Should it or should it not have been retired? And, you know, part of the crowd is really joyful, and many of the other astronauts that are referenced in this article are lamenting and saying that it should never have been canceled, and there was still life in it, and on and on and on. Of course, it's a done deal, and I suspect it's a done deal for the other two shuttles as well. Any thoughts on this? Again, listeners, if you're not a subscriber to Alan Boyle and his Cosmic Log, you can find the article. It's called Astronauts Revisit the Shuttle Debate, or go to MSNBC.com and do a search on their site for Cosmic, C-O-S-M-I-C, Log, or Alan Boyle, B-O-Y-L-E, and you'll come up with with the article. Apparently, it's brought the discussion back up. Not that I can tell that anyone has a plan to do anything about it.
Well, I think it was a mistake, David. There was an effort to privatize shuttle. I'm not talking about completely privatize it, but there were some serious people that had some smart ideas, I thought, about taking shuttle and keeping two of the vehicles alive and flying and working, and basically take USA and some of these other companies and go off and run the shuttle program as a private sector venture. I thought it was a great idea. And why NASA didn't pay more attention to it is a mystery to me, particularly now when we look at what's happened and the gap we have before we go back into flying our own machine. They could have easily retain shuttle, at least two vehicles, one flight ready and one standby. And they, even if they only had a flight or two a year, we would at least had the capability to get up to our own space station. So, yes, I think it was a mistake to cancel when they did.
And, I don't think there's anything that can be done about it.
No.
I know some of the people involved in that, those 11th hour privatization talks,
yes.
And some of it made the news, the space news, around the end of the year, really early into the first year. The story did leak out and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
They're asking me to let them talk freely on the space show, I can't tell you what I'm hearing, but
yeah.
I can tell you and the listeners this, that I'm carefully thinking about it, because I don't think I can verify what I'm hearing, and that makes it reluctant for me to do the show about it.
Yeah, I understand.
And if I could verify it, I might have a different attitude toward it, but it's heart-wrenching, and I really don't think that those last two shuttles, Endeavour and Atlantis, had to be retired. Discovery had already been largely decommissioned and was being taken apart. It was kind of beyond bringing back. But but Endeavour and Atlantis were still in storage, and they had not yet started on them. I would have given them an opportunity to do it, but I do know SLS was a competitive project, and Congress has a real sweet spot for SLS. And you know, politics enters the world on almost everything we do these days.
In fact, you know, NASA has been totally integrated with politics, you know, in the last few years. We had our fair share of politics in Apollo, but at least it was control where they didn't get their hands into the actual design and coming up with configurations and so forth.
Well, it's
payloads and all that.
We're way beyond that today,
Oh, yeah, we are. And unfortunately, some of those staffers in Washington think they're rocket scientists. And that's been scary to watch some of that develop over the past several years. But I really think that there was people in NASA that were convinced that if they didn't cancel Shuttle, that we would never have a new program approved. And that attitude, that mindset was all the way through the agency and all the way through the aerospace community, and that basically is what people basically said. We've got to let Shuttle go, because if we don't, we're not going to ever get to a new vehicle.
But then they cancel the new vehicles a year or two down the road.
Right around, the new administration comes in, we get and it gets totally wiped out. So the whole justification for shutting Shuttle down went away. And that's the sad thing, and they didn't bring it back when they saw what was happening. They didn't say, let's stop this right now before we shut down Shuttle. Let's keep it alive for another year and see what happens. They could have done that, and it would not have been a great loss to the program.
You got an email from Paul in San Diego, and he says, going back to that first segment email about motivation, I think the problem is that the space enthusiast community, including those that work in aerospace, are pretty small, and we don't compare in terms of a pressure group to, say, the AARP, the National Rifle Association, people lobbying for cancer drugs or this or that help, or people you know, needing college loan debt forgiveness or things like that. We're a really small segment of the population, even if you take us all together. And we are not only split, but our interests are really varied, because there are so many things to be interested in today as compared to the days we went to the moon. Just the TV stations alone with cable go into the hundreds. Plus, we have more computer power in our smartphones than we had going to the moon. It's such a different world with so many different interests, and I just don't think that space stands up well in competition to everything else that is out there and available to people to focus on and to get interested in. I suspect if we want to have a robust space program, somehow space has got to be made more relevant to people and more as a priority. But there's so much to compete with, I don't see how it can do that. Any comments?
Yes. The space supporters has always been small in comparison to the population. This goes back to even in Apollo days. We did not have enough people who would write to their congressmen. People that support the space program are not the kind of people who write letters to congressmen and complain and so forth and so on. So it is a small group of people, and it's gotten smaller, I agree with that, than it was some years ago. And there's so many different issues that we are faced with today, that space is a small part of those things that are considered, especially when you start talking about budget issues and so forth. We may be fortunate with the amount of money that we're seeing in this budget this year, David, for NASA. We may be more fortunate than we realize.
Absolutely.
When you look at some of the other things that's happening in the country, especially in government, NASA may have come out much better, and hopefully we can see some great things done with that money. That's the other thing we have to be careful of, is NASA goes off and makes some dumb decisions and finds out that, you know, they can't be successful in this particular design or whatever, and they get beat up over that. So we have to keep reminding our NASA friends and the aerospace community, listen, guys, don't make don't mess this thing up. You've got a chance now to go develop this new vehicle, do a good job. So I'm hopeful that we'll see that happen. But I know that that support base for NASA is small, and it's gotten smaller in the last few years.
You know, listeners, those of you that sit on the sidelines and lament or criticize or, you know, talk on the space show, or you post on space blogs about your favorite part of the space program, or you want to do this or that, or you want propellant depots or whatever turns you on, you really ought to be sending copies of these articles and your letters to Congress. I think Ed hit on something. We're not the kind of community that actively sits down and writes letters to members of Congress like the AARP. I mean, seniors are always pounding their representatives for their special interest, and the National Rifle Association is another one. And I get letters, I get emails every month from the different cystic fibrosis organizations with reasons to write my members of Congress to advocate this or that piece of legislation that has an impact on CF patients, because, again, you know, you all know that my son has CF. There isn't really a concerted effort like that in the space community. We're kind of independent. We're kind of mavericky. But I think he had to hit on something. We are a small community. We may or may not be growing in size. I don't know the answer to that. But we clearly need to have a more powerful vocal voice with the people who make policy. And, you know, even if we don't get a letter back from the guys, you know, in office, they probably do have someone on staff that at least statistically tracks what you're writing about. And maybe, listen, I'm not one to tell you it's going to make a huge difference, but if we don't vocalize our support and our concern, for sure, you know, it's not going to happen. It's like if you want to try to win the lottery, you have to play. So if you want a space policy, you have to play. And you can't win the lottery unless you at least buy one ticket. So even though the odds are against you, well, we're kind of in a little bit of the same boat with space. The odds are not in our favor. There's a lot of competing forces in the economy and a lot of people in need and a lot of reasons to spend the national dollar in this or that way other than with space. But if you don't step up to the plate and compete for your 0.5% or for a higher percentage, then you can't win to begin with. You got to play to win. I don't know what else to say. Ted sent in another note. He's active with us today.
Okay.
He said Eisenhower was a pragmatist. My reading is that he had reservations about von Braun. And he said, touching on the fact that NASA is a terrible bureaucracy, is a good discussion. Can anyone out there think of a good bureaucracy? I mean, we hit on NASA for being a really, you know, mismanaged, bad, this, that, and the other. I think it's just a mirror image of what goes on in our government. Can anyone name a bureaucracy that is really, really good? I mean, DOD works pretty well, but God Almighty, I bet the waste and the mismanagement and the problems, I mean, we see it with discipline and other things all the time. What's a good bureaucracy in the government? I'd like someone to name one. I mean, why should NASA be held to a different standard than the rest of the components of the U.S. government? Why should we think, Ed, that NASA should be the stellar, shining example of how a bureaucracy in the U.S. government is supposed to work?
You know, I think the first 2 years of NASA was the greatest. And the reason I say that is that's when the agency was new. It had new people, and no government regulations had been developed yet. We didn't actually have NASA management instructions and all sorts of regulations. We basically were a kind of a free operating agency. We had come from somewhere else, and all of a sudden we were dropped into an organization and told, you're going to go into space. And consequently, before the bureaucrats got in charge, and I was one of them, before the bureaucrats became really in charge, that agency did some wonderful things. You know, we put the first manned rocket together, Shepard. We flew him and all the Mercury guys and so forth. So I think what happens is when you get one of these governmental agencies created, for a while, it functions well, and everybody does their job. But then all of a sudden, the bureaucracy begins to invade it, and it finds out that it's supposed to be a government agency. It's supposed to have all these regulations, and consequently, you put on an overhead layer of administrative people, and that's what we did with NASA. In the early days, we had very, very few paper pushers and bureaucrats. Almost everybody was an engineer. Well, after a couple of years, they added all these administrative people, and then you saw the thing grow. And, of course, in a few years, it became a true bureaucracy. By the time we got to the moon in 69, it was the typical government bureaucracy. And so that's what happens, I think, with some of these governmental agencies. They start off with the right effect, the right mission, the right goals and objectives, but then they become a bureaucracy. And so I don't know how you control that after a while.
Well, listeners, here's your challenge. Maybe someone on archives, or there's still time left in today's program. You can tell me an example of a really good role model government agency. I'd like to know one. And then the other part of my question is, why do we in the space community believe that NASA should be held to a different standard of a government bureaucracy than the rest of the government? Why should our choice of a government program or a government agency be the one that is the role model for everything else? Why shouldn't it just be like any other government agency, which is pretty much, to me, what it is? I mean, Congress micromanages lots of parts of the budget, not just NASA. I mean, the things that we complain about are not unique to NASA, other than the fact that they take place in space and involve rockets. So help me out, listeners. I'd like to know the role model government agency. Surely there must be some out there, or at least one, and why we think NASA is so special and should be the role model agency rather than just a mirror image of the rest of the government. I think we understood that, Ed. Well, number one, we might go a little easier on NASA, and we might be looking more or less at government reforms in general rather than trying to cherry pick one smaller organization, NASA, to reform it. Because I think it's just part of the way government is operating in 2012, and unless you're able to make organizational wide changes in how we do things, the ability to affect one small bureaucracy is probably limited.
You know? I think sometimes we forget that NASA does have a very high risk mission. When you talk about human spaceflight, there's nobody else in government that comes close to. Of course, the DoD has obviously some very serious missions, but when you stop and think about what NASA's done in the past of flying humans out into a high risk environment, the moon and back, and they did it, you know, quite successfully. And you know, we've really only lost a small number of people in all of those missions that have been undertaken by NASA. When I look back on that, I really expected us to lose a lot more guys and gals in spaceflight. So, to be fair to our friends in NASA, they have done one heck of a job of taking care of those astronauts and maintaining the safety of spaceflight all these years, well over 50 years of spaceflight. And so it is a different mission from your typical government agency, who's the GSAs and the others. You know, it takes a different breed of people to run that agency, and thank goodness we still have a lot of those people in that agency that will, I'm sure, do their job, do it well in the future.
Connie is in Dallas, Texas, and this may be our last question because we're pretty much at the end of the program. She says, do any members of Von Braun's family have an interest in, work in, or do anything regarding space?
No. He does have an environmental one of the daughters is an environmental scientist, works in the environmental sciences, teaches in a university, but we actually, there's not a member of the family directly involved in space travel.
Do you ever talk to the family members?
Oh, yes, I do. In fact, I speak to the daughter and son and also Mrs. Von Braun. I try to visit with them frequently on the Internet, and then I try to have dinner with them a couple times a year. So, yes, I still stay in touch with them.
Well, do they care about space? Do they know what's going on?
Oh, yeah. They're monitoring it quite often. In fact, his daughter came to Huntsville on his 100th birthday last month,
uh-huh.
And spoke in honoring him on his 100th birthday. So, yes, they still follow the space program. They're very, very complimentary of Space Camp, which he's the guy who really created Space Camp. So, yes, they monitor the space program, very much interested in what's going on in the program, and also with his papers and the memorabilia and things that we're maintaining in Huntsville.
Does he have grandkids, and are they becoming space interested?
No, he does not have grandchildren. Does not.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So he has two daughters and a son?
That's correct, uh-huh.
And his wife is still alive?
Yes, she is. Yes, she is. Doing fine.
Well, when you talk to them, they don't know the space show from Adam, but give them regards from the space show and all of our listeners. Because I agree with what you said earlier. I think without Von Braun and his team, we probably would not have accomplished what we did when we did. I mean, we might have accomplished it, but it would be much, much later on.
Yeah.
And I think we're most fortunate that we were able to bring them over in paperclip after the war. And I think they served our interests very, very well.
Well, you know, I look at what occurred in the 60s and 69 and moon landing, and I really believe it was a German brain power, American ingenuity and pride, and one fantastic aerospace industry that took us to the moon. But we had to have the help from our German friends to teach us some basic understanding of rocketry. But once we got that accomplished, this country built those machines, and we built machines in those days that's never been duplicated. You know, nobody has ever built another lunar module to operate in a vacuum and successfully land, you know, 12 astronauts on the moon and return them safely. And we did that with American industry. So that you gotta remember, American industry enabled us to go to the moon.
Absolutely, and. It looks like the private sector is American private sector, and the entrepreneurs are probably going to be those that we rely on to return to the moon and to go further out.
I think you're right, and I think we have to put our hopes and dreams on the American industry team again. They might not have quite the support from NASA, and may not need it, you know, in this particular case, because we may find that. The private sector steps up and becomes our space flying core for the country, and I'm certainly comfortable with that. I hope they can be successful, and I'm looking forward to that SpaceX mission coming up here shortly, and we'll hopefully see that to be a successful venture.
Any closing comments, pearls of wisdom, something you want us to be looking forward to, and all of that?
Keep the dream of space flight alive. Don't forget, we're still the only country that has sent astronauts out of Earth orbit, and I'm hopeful that we'll continue to be successful in doing that with the private or the NASA program. I'd like to see both be successful.
Absolutely. I, as I've said many times on the show, that what we really should have in this country is a vibrant, thriving civil space program side by side with a vibrant, thriving, commercial, entrepreneurial, private sector program where they facilitate and enhance one another. And I think that's our ticket to being spacefaring. And hopefully we'll be able to accomplish that down the road.
Well said. Well said, Dave.
Ed, until the next time, do you have a book coming up or anything on the horizon?
No, I'm right now in between books. No books.
Well, let me know what's next on your your horizons, and we'll bring you back on the program.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, and listeners, that's it for today, Friday, and then come back again on Sunday. We have our regular Sunday Space Show program. Thank you all for listening to today's program. Goodbye from Ed Buckby, the Space Show, and myself.